Well, hello and welcome to Church 307 Podcast. We are Wyoming's online church. And so if you are looking for a place to pursue God online and you are from Wyoming or just somebody who likes Wyoming, this is a place for you to do that. And we just talk about topics that help us grow deeper in our faith and become the people that God created us to be. And so welcome to you. If you would like and subscribe to this channel, that would be helpful to us. Share it with some friends. If something we say, you're like, yeah, my brother needs to be good at that, you can share it with your brother and make your brother good at the thing that he's terrible at right now. And that's one way of using this as a weapon.
A weapon.
You're like, all right, Grant, hit it.
Yep. Send it.
Yeah, we are. You notice I said Grant hit it. That's usually Mitch's thing to do.
Mm.
Mitch is gone today, so we are all a little confused and just, yes, no, you're not Mitch. And we're just trying to pretend like we know what we're doing because Mitch is in Germany.
Germany with his family.
How do you say Germany in German? Deutschland.
Deutschland.
There you go. Yeah. He is over there eating sauerkraut and brats.
Yes. Maybe, I think Elena had spaghetti ice cream.
I heard about that.
Yes.
Sounds amazing.
It does.
Maybe.
Not made out of spaghetti. It just looks like spaghetti.
Yeah.
So
Mitch, I hope you're watching. And if you're not, then, you won't hear anything I say now. So it doesn't
matter. That's right. We're not going to fire him.
That's right.
We need him back. But.
So I am sitting here today with the Boffmans. We're talking about love. So what better way to talk about love than to set Paul Boffman across the table.
Wow.
Karen Boffman.
And I can just look into her eyes the whole time.
So that they can gaze at each other and fall in love all over again.
Yeah.
Is that the type of love we're talking about? Eros? Is that Eros?
It is. We are not. I don't think. I didn't look at every time the word love is used in 1 John.
Okay.
See if there was an Eros.
There?
I don't know.
Oh.
I didn't look at all of them.
Oh.
I did not look at all of them, but most of them, for sure, were agape.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're talking sacrificial love is the vast majority, for sure.
Yep.
There could be a philia in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But
there's four types of love, right? I don't know. I read C.S. Lewis's Four Loves in college, and I remember him saying there were four types of love in the Bible.
Yeah.
So there's philia, that's Philadelphia.
Right.
That's brotherly love.
Yep.
Then you got agape, which is sacrificial, help each other out love. Then there's the Eros, erotic.
Mm-hmm.
Husband
and wife love.
Husband and wife love.
There you go.
Christianese. And then I can't remember what the fourth one is. It's family love.
Yeah. And that's one of the, and I don't remember what that one is. And it's because it's what the least used one.
Right.
That you can find in scripture.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll have to do our research.
And it's largely because the agape word is used as family love a lot. When we're reading about family love in scripture, it's often agape. There
right.
is a fourth word. I cannot think of it off the top of my head.
Right.
Grant, put it on the screen right now.
Maybe by the time we're done, one of us will come up with it.
Yeah. But mostly in 1 John, we're going through 1 John right now, and mostly in 1 John, what you read about is agape love.
Agape love. And in 1 John, the cool thing about this is, you know, you talked about in your talk last week that there's themes that run through 1 John. And within 1 John, the word love is just, it's all through it.
Yeah.
We're going to be looking a little bit today of chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, how John just runs it through. And I know you, Karen, have done some different studies on 1 John. You love the love that he shares through 1 John. So, you know, one of the fun songs that I look at is, it takes us back, Mike, to before my time. So it's way before your time.
Way before my
yes,
time.
Yes, I know you're going to say
we're talking
that,
like the 30s.
No, not quite there. 60s, I think.
Oh.
But the Beatles wrote this amazing song called All You Need Is Love.
Got it.
And I think that John would agree with them based on what he shares in his book, that all you need is love. And the cool thing is, you think about music, and I know that both of you are huge music lovers. And I found this fun fact. I'm going to read it here so I don't mess it up. But a study on the psychology of music determined that about 67% of lyrics in every song, in every decade since the 60s, were somehow about love.
Mostly the Eros love.
Probably. Either that, or if you go to country music, it's probably their love for their truck
there
or their dog, something like that.
A little bit of Eros love there, too.
A lot of it is about lost love.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the pain.
A lot of songs.
Yeah. You're going into Taylor Swift now. Yeah. All of her breakups. So
I wouldn't know. You have teenage daughters, so.
Well, they don't listen to Taylor Swift much that I know of, but still, yeah. So as you think about love, you know, John, in the book of 1 John, he jumps into it right away, and he shares in chapter 2, he says, "Dear friends, I'm not writing a new commandment for you. Rather, it's an old commandment that you have from the very beginning. This old commandment is to love one another." And so you think about, what's he talking about when John is talking about this old commandment? Why does he call it an old one?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we look into Leviticus.
Oh, way back there. And the,
yeah,
there,
Leviticus
everybody has 19:18
says, love your neighbor as yourself. So we can, I mean, and that comes forward into Jesus's teaching as well, right? Like we refer back to that all the time. So it was a literal command.
Love your neighbor. And also in Deuteronomy, where I'm spending a little time in my devotions right now in Deuteronomy, I love the book of Deuteronomy. The last words that God through Moses got to share with the people before they went to the promised land. And all throughout there is love. God is sharing the understanding of love me, pay attention to me, and love your neighbor. So it's in there.
Yeah, so much of the Old Testament that we look at is this power struggle of getting what I want. I got to behave correctly so that God will give me what I want. But when you look at the commit, so we don't focus on that because we're focused on the story of the Old Testament. But when you look at the actual commands of God, what his intention was, love was always part of the storyline. It was just man removing it from the storyline. And so you didn't see it as much in the Old Testament as we would like to.
The cool thing is John doesn't let us there and just saying, hey, it's an old commandment, you should keep doing it. But instead he says, but Jesus made it new.
Yeah.
He made it fresh. He made it new. And just an image that, you know, that I shared yesterday in my sermon was an image of you both have minivans and you both have children.
Funny you say you're like, you're married, so that means
you have
one too.
Well, we do, but I consider it hers.
Okay, I see how that works. That tells me a little bit about your marriage.
I know, that's right. We are separate on certain things in the minivan.
Yes,
you have a minivan.
I have a minivan.
And I think for both of you, with having kids, you understand that sometimes minivans get old. They look old and messy. And
crummy.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially under our
What are some
robes.
Of the... What are some of the things that
when
you
Grant had his first baby, my only gift for him was I bought him a cover that goes under the car seat to protect his car seat.
You know, we've had those too, but they get so nasty fast that you have to replace them. And so you think about when your minivan gets old, like if you have someone or if you do it yourself and you make it nice, that's making it new.
Yeah.
So it's the same old commandment, John says. It hasn't changed. It's the same commandment that we heard in Leviticus, that we heard in Deuteronomy, throughout all the old covenant, but Jesus made it new.
Yeah.
How
he even said, a new command I give you. So John says, this is not a new command, love each other. And then he says, but Jesus made it new, because when Jesus was talking, he said, a new command I give you. And he says, love one another. Then he adds on the end of that statement, love one another as I have loved you.
John 13:30.
Impressed. That's all. In another John passage. As I have loved you is the different part. Earlier, he says, you've heard it said, love your neighbor. I tell you to love your enemy. And so he quotes himself in the Old Testament. He's like, this is the old. This is what we're used to. Love your neighbor. Love people. But I make it new. How? By taking it to a whole new level, like just extreme severity in how much we're supposed to love each other.
It's a cool level. Yeah. And then he says, not only is it new that Jesus made it new, but he also says, and you also are living it. So you're making it new as well. You as the individual that John is writing this to, which is us.
Yeah.
How does that happen? How do we make this old commandment of love one another How do we make that new? What do you think?
I think we're all called to love in our own sacrificial ways. The reality is, every time I have a conversation with somebody that is struggling in their marriage, who has a parent who abused them, when you ask them to love that person who has hurt them, that's not old to them.
Right.
That is a new way. That is a new challenge. And that's not easy for anyone to love to that kind of level. And that's the level of love that Jesus is calling us to. So for every one of us, when I experience for the first time loving somebody that I feel hatred toward, choosing to love someone that has hurt me, that is taking love to a whole new level in my life that I've never had to before.
Well, it's, and you often will say, love is a verb, right? The kids will say, I love you, Dad. And Paul says, love is a verb.
Prove it.
Dishwasher needs emptied. Love me.
But I think that's what, you know, that's what Jesus is saying. You also are living it. And that's what, you know, the John 13:34 passage is saying. Like, you show your love by your actions. And I think the next verse after that is says, that's how we, his disciples, yeah, show the world that we are his disciples, is by loving one another. And so I think that's the elevation of this really comes out in how do we live, and do our lives look different than others' lives? Does the love that we express not just look like Eros love, but does it look like?
Yeah. And you think, Mike, your sermon 2 weeks ago, you shared the analogy for how we parents are like, you know, SEAL Team 6.
Yeah.
And that it's hard to love. And you think about how we're supposed to love our enemy. I hate to say it, but there are some times that we emotionally feel that our babies are our enemy because they're taking our sleep away from us. They're taking our schedule away from us. That all three of us have had babies and we've all been frustrated. And that's the challenge of what agape love is. It is sacrificial.
It's not just
I know.
I mean, it proceeds as our kids get older, right? And I think sometimes the older they are, the more we expect of them, the harder it is for us to show them sacrificial love. In those moments when they're struggling, we want them to do what we want them to do. They're struggling. And so then love is, am I willing to sacrifice in this moment, getting where I want to get or doing what I want to do to love?
There's no doubt in the world. And John says this then. He takes us on this journey as we continue down this chapter, that he says sometimes love gets in the way of love, depending on what we're wanting to love. It's in verse 15. He says, do not love this world nor the things it offers you. For when you love the world, you do not have the love of the Father in you. Because the love of the Father is when we're looking at the relationships in front of us.
And I'm right now meeting with a couple who has adopted a kid who has disabilities as a result of shaken baby syndrome. And before I had kids, I would look at from the outside and I'd say, how could any adult shake their baby? How could a parent shake their baby? Like, that just seems like a level of evil that I cannot comprehend. But then you have a kid and you realize there is a point at which your brain just isn't working correctly.
So exhausted.
Sleep deprivation and frustration, and you've tried everything, you're at wit's end, when obviously I would never consider shaking my baby because I know the results. But there is a moment in your life when you're not acting logically because there are other things demanding your attention, demanding, I value my sleep, I value my time, I value all these things, and so they are going to step in the way of what should be unconditional love for my kid because these other things are demanding my attention. And that plays out obviously all over our lives when there are things demanding our desires. I'd rather be playing video games than playing with my kids, or I'd rather be playing golf or whatever I'd rather be doing, causes me to make poor decisions in my relationship with the people that I should actually be loving sacrificially.
There's no doubt. I mean, yeah, how many times in my life where, as a dad, just going to that spot there where I've had that my sinful nature, my selfishness get in the way because I'm loving whatever it is in front of me that I want to love, whether I'm watching the game, whether I'm wanting to be outside doing something on my own in my garage, doing whatever it is that I have on mind. And one of my kids says, Dad, let's do this. Just that one little phrase. It's amazing how quickly that can, you know, just really irritate you.
Oh, yeah.
When you want to love that thing or that activity that's in front of you instead of the relationship.
Sometimes you want to love your kids from a distance. Like, can I love you, but you stay over there?
And you doing your thing and me doing my thing.
Yeah.
But that's, then I'm missing out on the love of the Father.
And every time I have this conversation with somebody who's been a parent for a while, their statement is always like, just know how short that time is. Like, you don't have much time with your little kids. Know that that's going on. But when you're in the moment, it seems like it's taking forever. You keep saying it's short, but he keeps peeing his bed. He won't stop peeing in his bed. Like, how many times am I going to have to do this? Whatever it is. The frustration of the moment just kind of clouds your ability to see the long term.
It does.
You read that passage, verse 15, that says, you do not have the love of the Father in you. And I'm trying to square the idea of having love in me with love being an action. If love is an action, then what is in me? So apparently it's more than just an action. And I think that's what I want in my loving relationships. Is that, okay, I can do the action of love for a long time. I can choose, I'm going to sacrifice, I'm going to choose not to get what I want, and I can do that for a while. But the hope is that eventually I get to the point where I feel something. Like, I want my heart to change. I have this conversation with people in marriage counseling sometimes. They're like, okay, for a while, I can sacrificially love. For a while, I can be in this relationship and not feel good about this relationship. But at some point, I want it to get to the place where I start feeling love for this person. Is there room there for that? Is it possible for that feeling to come back into a relationship? Or am I just doomed forever to, nope, you got to just keep doing the action?
I don't know if you were doing this as a segue or what, but that leads us to what John says in chapter 3.
Hey, I wasn't, but you're welcome.
Yeah. And it takes us back to what you shared in your sermon 2 weeks ago a little bit as well. He says, see how very much our Father loves us. There's that love of the Father that you just meant. You question, how do we get that? Well, it's us, the realization that there's nothing that I can do to get that love from the Father. The love is already there. It's Lincoln's dog and Titus's dog. That it's what the Father shares with us that puts that love in us that should then stir us to that action.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm thinking of an illustration. So we are a conduit, like a conduit for electricity, right? And that conduit can take Mike's love to his children. But eventually, Mike's love is going to run dry, get short-tempered, get stale, be frustrated, right? When the kid says the wrong thing, does the wrong thing, then Mike snaps, right? Or Mike can be a conduit for the Father's love. And I think that's what it's talking about, the Father's love being in us. It's kind of like we, at some point, have to empty ourselves of us trying to do the Karen love, the Mike love, like, we have to allow the Father's love through us. And for me as a parent, best example I have is one of our children who will remain nameless struggled a lot with anxiety when this child was much younger and struggled so much about going to sleep at night because they were so anxious that I was going to die. Could not go to sleep because they were so worried every night. And so for a couple of years, I sat outside this child's doorway every night waiting for this child to go to sleep. And I was so frustrated. And he was so frustrated. Like, when are you ever going to not have to sit outside that doorway? But as I sat there night after night, I kept hearing God say, just love your child. Just love your child. Do what is loving right now. And for that child, what was loving to that child was my presence. And so did I want to be sitting there every night? No, I did not. But Karen's love would have run dry far before. You know, I wouldn't have sat there night after night for a couple of years waiting for this child to move through this season of anxiety. But God's love was flowing through me. Does that happen in every instance? Absolutely not. But I think that's what the point is here, right? Is that the love of the Father in us. So it has to be His love. Right. It has to be His love.
So you think, you know, that imagery of you sharing that with your child, that's the Father saying, "Isn't that for you, Mike?" That's the Father looking at you saying, "Dude, I'm with you. Every night when you're drifting off to sleep, I'm sitting in your room, hanging with you because, not because of anything you did throughout the day. Instead, what did you say in your sermon? You were rebelling throughout the day, but while you were rebelling, I'm hanging."
Yeah. So maybe I'm conflating a different kind of love with the agape love when I talk more about a marriage relationship that has been broken for some way, because those people they don't feel the way you feel about your son. And even in the moment, sometimes you don't feel the love for your kid, but you do. You love your kid. Like, you feel that emotion of love. That isn't always the case about a marriage relationship. And I've been coached to tell married couples who do not feel the love for each other anymore to do the actions of love, and that someday the feeling of love will follow those actions. That God will work through that behavior to allow the feelings or the emotions to return. Honestly, I've not seen that happen much. I've tried to coach people in that direction, hoping that marriages will see that. I've not seen it a lot.
The other thing that I do, I share that in my coaching as well with married couples, but the extension that I share also is the understanding of the marriage imagery that God shares with us, that how did God love church? How does God love us? This whole imagery of that it has to come from God. And so, you know, what John says here next, he says, we know what real love is because Jesus gave up His life for us. And so if I'm a husband that's struggling to love in my marriage, what can help me to get to a better place of loving my wife, even when it might be hard in the moment for whatever that reason is? Where do I find the ability to do that? Well, I need to look at the one who loved me first.
Yeah. Because that's really the bottom line truth, is the feeling of emotion is not what real love is. The feeling of love is not what real love is. What real love is that action, is that sacrifice. And that's kind of the hard truth. That's not what I want to hear. Mm-hmm. If I'm coming in for marriage counseling, I want to hear you're going to make me reattracted to my wife. Mm. I want to hear you're going to fix my brain so that now I have these gushy feelings about them anymore. God says, nope, you need to redirect your attention. And part of that is the reason why our culture is in such an unhealthy place when it comes to love. We are dealing with all types of screwed up ways of thinking about marriage because we still think love is a feeling. And the bottom line is, at some point we have to tell couples, you may not ever feel that feeling again. Get over it and keep moving forward. Now you can begin to pray that God will heal something in your relationship so that you can feel the emotion again. But the reality is, that is not what true love is.
Right. Well, and that's not what godly love, you know, that's not what a godly love is. Our society, you're absolutely right. If we look at TV, if we look at books, if we look at movies, what are we seeing? We're seeing the mushy-gushy fall in and out of romantic love relationships, right? It's every sitcom we've ever watched. It's
chick flicks.
You know, it's what we've been taught to look for in love. But then when we look at what does Scripture say, if you love me, you will obey me. Obedience is love, you know, and love each other. He says, what's the new commandment? Do what I've done. I sacrificed. I went the whole way to the cross for you. I gave up my life. I was selfless. That's what love is. It's so countercultural. It's not what we've been taught. And so, yes, if that's what we're looking for, we're going to be disappointed time and again.
And you, I've been watching this LGBTQ debate that the church has been having for so long. And the whole time, I'm trying not to get down into the weeds of the silliness of the argument sometimes. But I think if any of us take a step backward and look in on the argument, what it all is about is, can I have what I want? Can I get what I want? Can my feelings, how much do my feelings matter? And we just try to elevate as much as we possibly can. I should get what I want. And I mean, that type of relationship is kind of unique to our culture. Now, there have been other cultures that have had that type of relationship before. But for so much of our history, we had things like arranged marriages. And it wasn't about a feeling and you getting your emotions. It was very practical. Like, why is government in the business of marriage? It's for purely practical reason. The government got into marriage because, like, if you're married to somebody, you're more likely to be healthy. And so we want you to be married. You're more likely to have kids, and we want you to have kids, so you should be married. So the government got into the business for practical reasons, and then we turned marriage into this mushy, ooey-gooey, I want to feel some feelings thing that just
unhealthy. It sells better movies and better sitcoms. It just does.
Yeah.
So, but what does John bring us back to when he says this, again, in verse 16, we know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life. And it's a cool imagery of what that is. It's the Greek word, see, read it here, tithemi, which is the...
Good job.
Thank you. It is the imagery of setting something aside, of giving something up. It's a cool image. And so real love is laying something aside so that... There's a so that. I mean, there's a reason that Jesus gave up his life. It's so that he could provide life to someone else, which was us. So it's an action of sacrifice, of laying something aside with the intention of providing life. So you think about how we do this. Think of the babies that you raised, and we lay aside our sleep, we lay aside our food, we lay aside our activities, our hobbies that we might have been busy doing, we lay them aside. Why? So that we can provide that baby life.
Giving up something for someone.
To give them something. And the cool thing is, if when we get this right, not only are we providing life for them, but that's where the true abundant life is found.
Yeah.
When we pull alongside Jesus and start living like Jesus did, which, what's the primary thing Jesus did? He came to give up his life. And in giving up his life, he found life. That's us.
You're doing something really cool that I think John does too, that I don't know is an easy connection for us to make. And it is this interchangeability of love and life. Love is life. And so like love gives life in multiple ways. I mean, that's the sexual relationship. That is the marriage relationship. Two people becoming one. Love and life are all throughout John's writings, like these interchangeable ideas. You can't have one without the other. Without love, you have death. And so when you put that into perspective with what Jesus does on the cross, we understand how, okay, his love for us gives us life. And apart from him, we have no life.
It's powerful. When you can really grab hold of this and what it can do in your marriage, you know, if you can recognize that he loved us first, which John will get to that in just a minute, if you can grab hold of that and understand that, and then allow that to play out in your marriage, in your parenting, in your friendship relationships, it can change your life.
Yeah.
And it can change the lives of the people around you. And one of the cool things for John was he got to see this new and fresh idea of love so much in what Jesus shared with him. You know, I think of the one of my favorite places is where Jesus demonstrated this tithemi, where in the upper room, John chapter 13, when he washed the feet of the disciples, it says that he took off his outer garment and he laid it aside. There was a purpose in that, so that he could go and wash the feet of the disciples to get the muck and the mire. And what was he doing? He was doing that to share life, because they were not going to be able to eat that meal, right, the Passover meal, this big and heavy, awesome opportunity. They couldn't eat the meal until their feet were washed, and no one else was there to do it. So Jesus, not only did he lay aside his garment, he laid aside, he didn't have any pride, but he had the position. Yeah, of being the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He's the Messiah, and he laid that aside, and he got down and he washed the muck.
But if we're going to do the same thing, we're going to have to lay aside our pride.
You're right.
I have seen a couple weddings now where they do the foot washing of each other, and I'm like, okay, washing my wife's feet, that's not that cool. Cool. I can do that.
Yeah.
My wife has pretty feet. But outside of that, I'm like, I'm not.
Have you guys ever been part of a foot washing before?
No.
Tell me some of the emotions that you experienced in a foot washing.
Well, I mean, I've been part of a bunch. So I can tell you the emotions of the people, because usually we've done it with teenagers, right? We've done it at youth groups, and the teenagers are like, you are not touching my feet.
Or,
it's the people whose feet are being washed that don't like it, mm-hmm, not the washers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it's usually the leaders are saying, like, we're coming to serve you. It's kind of a humility thing, and just it's a teaching moment. Right. Right. So when we've done it with youth, and the youth.
The cool thing, the one time.
Pulling out my dirty dogs, you know, like, no way.
Teenagers once with Pastor Paul Wilcox. We done it. And he gets so excited about doing this because we don't do all of the kids' feet, but feet. Whoops. The feet?
Feet.
Feet. But instead, Paul would wash someone, and then that kid would have to go and wash one of the other kids. Oh, that just got pretty emotional now, because no one wanted to wash the kid who took off these dirty, ugly looking basketball stinky shoes. No one wanted to get to his feet.
Yeah.
And so it was always cool when you watch one of the teenagers who did have a faith, and to watch them lead, being willing, wash that.
Yeah.
That's powerful. That's love. That's what real love is. They were willing to lay aside the grossness to wash that kid's feet.
That was probably Thomas's feet. Thomas had gross feet.
The doubter?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you look at Peter. Peter said, Jesus, you're not going to wash my feet. So it was those individuals that said, no way. I'm not going to let you up here come down to that level. John experienced real love by watching Jesus, how he led, how he loved, how he taught, how many of his parables were talking about this kind of love.
Wondering what, I'm being a little quiet because I'm trying to rack my brain and think of what is the equivalent today of washing feet. Like, we can do it metaphorically now. The reason why they did it back then was very practical. They're wearing sandals around dung-covered roads, and I mean, they needed their feet to be washed. We now have clean socks and clean shoes every day. So I'm racking my brain trying to think, what is a modern day equivalent of washing somebody's feet? I bet it's a very practical.
What do you think?
Action.
Someone's laundry,
yeah,
maybe?
Could be.
Similar.
It's taking care of dirty stuff. Yeah. Or stuff that's awkward.
The chore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think about.
For hygiene purposes. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, but like, how about, you know, you're not washing my dirty
underwear.
I know
it's a job for them, but how about nurses that are cleaning bedpans?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because that for a nurse to go into that job, there has to be a sense of love for humanity. Might not be for that individual, but I mean, because there's a lot of other jobs out there.
Yeah.
And if they're smart enough to be a nurse, they're smart enough to do something else. Yeah. So to be willing to be servant-hearted as a nurse and to do some of those.
We live in a transient community of a lot of people moving in and out of town. And I think moving people is one of those, has the same emotion when I think about the idea of washing somebody's feet. Number one, I don't want anybody to move me, because that's just, you see all my stuff and see that I kept that thing that I should have thrown away 10 years ago. And especially in our community, when somebody's moving away, I feel this emotion come over the community when somebody says, I'm moving away. Because we've had it happen to us so many times.
Boss.
And every time, it's almost like there's a shunning process that happens amongst their friend group. It's like they're no longer one of us. They're not part of our community anymore. And so they just kind of, part of it is them slowly distancing themselves for personal reasons and buying a house in the new place, so their mind is there. But serving somebody when you know they're moving away and they've got nothing that they can turn around and give you in return. It's like, this is not an exchange of service, like I'll do for you if you do for me next. It's like, you're moving away and I'm not getting anything in return for this.
You know where I've seen the love actually go beyond that barrier there, though, is when our life groups do it. Mm. I've seen some life groups who have a love for this individual in it, because they're like family. They've shared some of the grossness of life around the table. They just have. And so for their willingness to go beyond those emotions, saying, I'm going to love you anyways, that's real love.
Yeah.
And I've seen that in some of our life. Pretty cool. You know, close it out. You know, John, where does he take us? But he talks about how if you are someone who received the love of the Father, which means you're a child of the family, if you are one of them, then you should have an imagery of the DNA as part of your life. You either do or you don't. So if you say that you receive this relationship, and he talks about that in chapter four. Your friends, let us continue to love one another, for love comes from God. Anyone who loves is a child of God and knows God. It's cyclical. You know, because you know God, you're a child of God. And because you're a child of God, you're going to know God even more. But anyone who does not love does not know God. That's a serious statement.
Yeah. And that's that knowing, that Greek word knowing there is deeper than just intellectual knowing. It's not like, I know he exists. It's kind of like the difference between the Greek idea of believing and the English idea of believing. It's like, it's not just that I know God exists. It's much more, it's an intimate relational knowing. And so if you're knowing God, then you have a relationship similar to how scripture would say knowing your wife is more than just, hi, nice to meet you knowing. It is the, I have a relationship and it has affected me in some way. It's changed.
There's intimacy.
Yeah. And I think that intimacy, what he's alluding to here is that intimacy changes us. And I think this is kind of the whole idea of the this love idea in 1 John, is that an encounter with God's love changes us. That is what that's sanctification. That when I recognize his love for me in my undeserving state, that it sanctifies me, it changes me. Something is knocked loose and I become more like him when that happens.
This is exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is life transformation. It just is that when we can grab hold of this concept of love, first, the love of the Father, that while I didn't deserve it, he loves me anyways. There's an action there. How much does he love me? He gave up his son for me. He died on the cross. The Father laid aside his son for me.
Yeah.
It starts there. And as part of that, he adopts me in as a child of God, which is, I'm adopted into a bloodline.
Does that make you a demigod? Always. Adopted. Maybe not.
Wow.
On that heretical note, hey, just so you know, we are going to be making some changes to the format here of the Church 307 podcast. And in the month of August, I'm going to be interviewing some pastors and some other leaders about some topics that they are experts in. And so I think it'll help you see another side of faith that you likely have not heard before as we interview these people. And so make sure you're checking in for the month of August. Karen and Paul, thanks for joining.
And great job. Can we just stay here for a while and I can just, because the Beatles are right. All we need is love.
Well, when we hang up this episode, Paul's going to sing to us.
Ah, there we go.
On the way out. But yeah, if you would like and subscribe to this channel, that would be extremely helpful to us and help getting the word out. Ding all those algorithm, whatever they are, and make sure that people know that this is here. And as you go, you should know that Jesus loves you unconditionally.
In action.
He died to give you a new life.